Now it's time for Tracy Martin from the New Zealand First Party.
This morning, Tracy and I discuss the storm and how people contact each other, which led somewhat into a discussion about the housing situation for our ageing population, a number of whom don't own their own home. We started by talking about the storm. Of course, you do talk about the storm after a storm. And I'd just like to say, though, I was in a safe house which wasn't affected other than a power cut. I'd like to put out there that there are a number of areas, and in fact, in Fiji, for example, that was hit by an actual cyclone, had it far worse. So here's Tracy.
Hasn't the weather turned shocking?
It's so bad.
And you're up in Auckland, aren't you?
Yes.
So yeah, and I heard you got a terrible night.
We had very, very, very strong winds, but then I texted my brother who lives in Wellington and he was kind of like, oh, it's a bit normal for us. But I was very much, I've never been in winds like that before, and also we had our power cut last night and it lasted throughout the whole night until I got up for work this morning.
Oh, no. I must check in with my children. They're over in the north part of Auckland, and their dad is off doing winemaking. So, you know, my children are not small children. Please, let's understand. They're in their 20s. But
but it is good to check.
Yeah, that's right.
I think, my phone was flat this morning. There's all that as well, if you've got no landline. And.
Well, that's right. See, now there's something that, from a senior's perspective, just nicely segues into. That whole thing about if you're in an emergency, and of course if we don't have copper wiring, and if your telephone lines are dependent upon electricity being there, then we have to think about it, don't we?
That's right. What do we do to fix it?
Once upon a time we used to, when the copper network was still quite strong, we used to all have emergency phones in the cupboard, you know, the old big push button phones that we could plug directly into the jack in the side of the wall of our house. But so many homes now, so many families don't have a landline connection because of costs. So they just have their, prepaid mobile phone, which the mobile phone network, I'd have to say, I think Kaikoura showed us that it can come back up relatively quickly. They do move very fast in emergencies to make sure that they get their cell towers back online. But, you know, then what you've got to talk about is you've got to talk about how do you charge your phone? How do people keep charging?
True that. Can't contact anyone if your phone is flat.
Exactly.
So the positive aging strategy, which has been announced in terms of trying to make retirement villages more affordable.
It's interesting what gets picked up. when you actually spend 40 minutes talking to a reporter, and then it's interesting what they decide is the piece that's going to make a headline. So it's a series of conversations that I've been having, and we've all been having, around affordable housing, right? But for me, I'd want to make sure that when we, this government, talk about affordable housing, that we recognise that more and more and more of our seniors actually don't own their own home. All right, so we've got a dropping demographic there. We used to, proudly be able to announce that the majority of our seniors had worked through their lives and they had paid off their home, they were mortgage-free, and that's why superannuation was adequate. So what we have to recognise is that for a variety of reasons, much of it has to do with the breakdown of marriages and so on and so forth, many of our seniors don't own their own home now. So they need affordable housing, just like the families that we're trying to make sure can get into affordable housing. So that was, I need to be very clear, there is no intention of this government to go and instruct any retirement village developer to build affordable housing. It's just that I'm having conversations in that vein. Like, how are we, in that whole conversation about affordable housing, how are we making sure that each part of where seniors are looking at, that we can actually have some influence there?
I see. But it does raise a couple of issues. Like you say, if we are, we do have an ageing population and people's situations are very, very different, how are we going to support everybody?
Well, it is interesting, and I've asked the minister, well, I'm asking the Ministry for Seniors to go away. And once upon a time, we had a lot of small, either council-owned sort of pensioner housing, I suppose, that were in clusters, so people could support each other. And we had things like my grandparents were in a Masonic village, for example, in Levin, where they rented a unit inside a sort of a much more sort of, it wasn't the big flashy villages that we see now, and they didn't have to have a license to occupy, they just rented. So, and they were in that environment that was safe and supported and people understood and so on and so forth. And over the last couple of decades, they have found it harder and harder to exist. So I'm quite interested in, okay, how many are left of the places like the Masonic Village that my granny was in? What can we do that might be able to support them more, if that's an answer to affordable housing for our seniors? And if we, let's get back to that storm, have a think of the seniors, and mostly they are older women who are on their own, who are still in their family home, and they would have had that, they would have been part of that big storm last night. Now, if they've got damage, if they've got, you know, they were frightened last night or whatever, whatever, is there somebody out there checking on them? And if they had an option, which is somewhere that they could rent that was affordable, that was in a safe environment where they were, you know, sort of very closely connected to their neighbours, would they make that choice? That's all I'm trying to articulate here.
Mm. Well, you're right. I mean, Labour, to an extent, or perhaps certainly Jacinda has conceded that we do need to start thinking about housing differently, right? Is there, you know, merit in thinking about how we need to perhaps shift this idea of what, you know, we all have as a Kiwi dream in terms of owning our own home with a big backyard that has its own space, that's somewhat separated to the rest of the community or even the rest of the street? How do we shift that and create spaces where we are actually all supporting each other?
Well, I mean, once upon a time we used to have both. I think that was what was interesting, is that we did have, you know, the quarter acre section or whatever. It was more like 600 squares, to be perfectly frank, when you got into Auckland. But we were connected to our neighbours, you know. So the kids did go across the road and play. And I'm sure that there's still places in New Zealand where that is the case. I think probably what we need to have a look at, and that's what I want to hear out of the positive ageing strategy. What is it that the 1.2 million seniors by 2036, what are the sort of environments that they see themselves living in? Do they still want to be in a 3 to 4 bedroom family home at the end, you know, in their 70s and in their 80s? Or do they want to have an option that is affordable for them to be able to move into where it is more closely connected to, you know, to other people of their demographic? But not on the outskirts of a lot of retirement villages that in my area anyway are built on the outskirts of town. So out in the paddocks, you know, as if we put our older people out there where we can't see them. And I think that, you know, I'll be interested to see from the positive ageing strategy whether older people want the opportunity to live in sort of villages with those that understand what they're experiencing, but not necessarily pushed to the outsides of our communities.
So how are you actually going about and doing that? How are you communicating with everyone?
Sure. So the Ministry for Seniors is organising a whole lot of workshops throughout New Zealand, and so they're just working on the plan at the moment. And I'm hoping to have a minimum of 40 you know, workshops where we get people around tables from that age demographic, but actually probably earlier. I need to hear the voice of the 40-year-olds and 50-year-olds who are heading into that, you know, retirement demographic. What is their vision for themselves as they age? But I want to do this very face-to-face and in a very sort of conversational type of a way. The last one was developed by flying in some older citizens to Wellington and just having them all inside a room and for them to come up with it. And that was in 2001. So, you know, our demographics, not just our age demographic and the level of health of our seniors has changed, but so has the heritage background of our seniors. So we're looking at working with the New Zealand Taiwanese community, the New Zealand Indian community, New Zealand Chinese community, and getting their voice inside what do they expect and what do they need to put to age positively inside New Zealand.
I guess jumping to the other side of that age line, you mentioned in your video this morning that it's the anniversary of the UN ratification of the rights of the child.
Yes, that's right. So we've got quite a large event here tonight. Prime Minister is leading it off. I think I'm speaking, and Judge Beecroft is going to be the keynote speaker.
What are the rights of the child?
Well, now, if I'd have known you were going to ask that question, I'd have them directly in front of me. I mean, the right to grow up without violence, the right to an education, the right to healthcare, the right to not be exploited, particularly the right, you know, and then there's the variation of rights around for children with disabilities, the right to inclusion. So there's quite a number of them. The right to be heard, I think, is the one that's probably really, really heightened at the moment. The right to be consulted about policies and laws, etc., that will affect children. So one of the big pushes I know from the Children's Commissioner, and he does a very good job at Select Committee, when, for example, the last Education Amendment Bill went through, he came and submitted at the Select Committee and said, well, nobody's actually asked children and young people about the changes you're going to make about something that affects them, you know, directly. So that's one of the other major, I think that's one of the major sort of rights of the child that we're all trying to make sure that we're doing a better job on.
Ka pai. Lastly, I was just wondering if you're following Mark Zuckerberg's Facebook trial.
I'm not.
Fascinating. I would recommend.
I haven't got time, honestly. Yes. Haven't had the time, but I've actually been home for about, I think, 50 hours in the last month, but I have got some time this weekend, so maybe I can catch up on what's been going on.
Definitely worth looking at.
Oh, truly. I mean, it's fascinating from what perspective of what they know about us that we didn't know.
Well, the way that I mean what's been one of the points that was raised was that the people, you know, questioning Mark Zuckerberg have taken things right back to the basics. So actually one of their questioning lines was along, you know, what Mark Zuckerberg himself found as inappropriate sharing of information. You know, like they asked him, would you tell us what hotel you're staying in, and would you tell us who you messaged this week on, you know, through Facebook or whatever?
Wow.
And he's like, no. So, you know,
right.
To what extent does that mean that we're not allowed to say no to, you know?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Wow, that's good, isn't
it? Yeah. And then, of course, much more complicated things.
Yeah, right, okay.
Anyway.
Oh, that's awesome. I'll go and check it out.
Have a great day.
Thanks, Lillian.
All
see
right.
ya.
See ya.
That was Tracy Martin from the New Zealand First Party. The Wire.